The Tom Woods Show, episode 623.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, all you business folks and entrepreneurs out there, if you want to increase your sales, you need to master email marketing, which means you gotta get to know Daniel Levis. Check out his free resources through tomwoods.com/Daniel. Friends, if you don't have the time of your life aboard the Contra Cruise in October 2016, then what can I say? I owe you a Coke. Bob Murphy and I are hosting a cruise that's going to be full of fun and games and music and fellowship and making new friends. A ton of fun. ContraCruise.com. Welcome, everybody. What a blast we're going to have today with Zachary Slayback. He's a co-founder of Praxis, which is an organization we've talked about in the past on the show, that promotes entrepreneurship among younger people instead of just telling them to go through the usual grind, to go to college, study sociology, and then have nothing to do. It's a very, very interesting alternative, and we're in particular going to talk about Zachary's forthcoming book called The End of School, subtitle Reclaiming Education from the Classroom. Wonderful stuff. We're going to have on the show notes page related episodes that I've done on education as well. That's tomwoods.com/623, and that's also where you can pre-order Zach's book. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. I'm excited.
I think what you're doing is absolutely great. The things you're talking about, your forthcoming book, the work that you're doing, it's all great and exciting. I mean, in a way, you really are a pioneer in a lot of ways. And people will look back and say, if only we had listened to that dude years ago, we wouldn't have screwed up our lives.
Hopefully they do listen.
All right. Gosh, there are so many directions I could take this in. Let's start off with your own personal story. Mm-hmm. You were admitted to the University of Pennsylvania, which is an Ivy League school. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long you went there, but I do know that you did not complete your time there. Have you ever had any reason to regret that?
No, not so far. It's funny. I actually ran into the representative for the University of Pennsylvania in my region the other day, just in a cafe nearby. And I went up and I was talking to him, and you know, he asked, "Oh, when did you graduate?" And I explained to him, "I didn't graduate." And he and I were talking about what I eventually went to go do instead of that. And he said, "You know what? Good for you. Too many people focus on just getting that degree. I have no regrets. In fact, I would say thus far in my life, it's one of the best decisions that I've made."
Now, that is going to be – I mean, you realize that you are violating one of the tenets of the American religion when you say that.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, college is part of American life. You send your kid to college. And, you know, the thing is, I know this isn't your primary point, but when I think back when I used to teach – and frankly – well, I wouldn't say in my own undergraduate experience, but in the experience of a lot of people – when I look around at some of the people who are in college, I don't think to myself, we need more such people in college diverted for 4 years. We need more subsidies for this.
Yeah.
I think to the contrary, these people are there because their parents are forcing them or out of sheer inertia.
Yeah.
They're not there because they're saying, I'm deeply fascinated by this, the various subject matter. I would say it is a very, very small sliver of people who have any interest at all in any of the college work that they're doing. They want the certification and they want to get out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here, but let me ask you the toughest question of all right at the beginning so that the rest of it will just be coasting for you. The fact is that given that today in our society, that whether you like this or not, the degree for certification purposes does seem to be important to a lot of employers, how can you say to people, well, you don't really need it?
You need to build a better signal. That's what you need to do. And what we are living in right now is a really exciting time if you're a young person in the United States right now. We're living in a time of a revolution in work, education, and entrepreneurship all at once. Because of the internet, because of all these other technologies around us, and because of how affordable and accessible they are, you can build a better signal, a better credential than just the college degree if you're an 18-year-old in the United States today. So people oftentimes ask me, you know, where do you think disrupting higher education is going to come from? And they like to get caught up in like Coursera and Yale Open Courses and things like that. And those are all good. And I'm glad that those are out there because that decentralizes and centralizes education at the same time. That makes it more accessible for plenty of people to actually learn things. But the market for higher education isn't a market for education. It's a market for the credential, right? So companies like Google, companies like WordPress and LinkedIn have done more to disrupt higher education than any of these other open courses, you know, MOOCs, things like that have. Where we are is that an 18-year-old can build a website, can essentially build a business from the ground up for like $100, and that will signal more to me than somebody just giving me a bachelor's degree. And the employers I talk to every day, more and more are in agreement with me.
I think also the passive aspect of just sitting in a classroom, having information fed to you, and then the presumption that you'll then go out on the job market and again sit there passively waiting to get a telephone call from somebody encourages, well, passivity.
Yep.
And it, instead of and by the way, I was as guilty of this as anyone. I went to college, I went to grad school, and then I sat there waiting, well, waiting for some employer to decide that I was worthy of hiring instead of thinking, what if I do something? What if I grab or find or create opportunities and do them? And it's been a total change in my mentality because nothing I do now is automatic. There's no employer telling me to do them. I come up with ideas and I implement them, and some work and some don't. But I love doing it, and I would be horrified to be living my life any other way now.
Right. And I think it's because of the rate at which we're seeing more and more young people in the United States today being schooled in more and more ways. You know, I meet families who throw their kids into school at like 3 years old. That's horrifying to me. And then they don't get out of school until they're like 25, 26 years old. Is it any surprise then that we're actually seeing a huge decline in entrepreneurship among young people? The answer is no, of course not. Because what you just described, that kind of activity, you know, actually being active and not being passive in the sense of being in a classroom, is something that's necessary if you want to be an entrepreneur in any sense of the word, right? If you want to be an intellectual entrepreneur, if you want to be a tech entrepreneur, if you want to be an author, anything like that, that's something that can't be picked up in the classroom. And spending so much time in the classroom actually discourages the kind of activity, the kind of habits, the kind of skills that you need in order to succeed in life.
I had a guy on my show. You might enjoy this episode, even though you might not be into email marketing. But one of the great email marketers is a guy named Ben Settle. And I had him on my show, and he was great. And at the end, he said, you know, look, because I had him on because he said a funny thing. He said, making money online is about as hard as falling off a log. There are so many ways to do it. But he said, look, all you need if you really want to do rock bottom is – I mean you do have to come up with something that people want. That's true of any – thing you're going to do in the economy, but you come up with a simple opt-in page and relentless email follow-up, and you're going to be successful. It's just it's not like brain surgery here, and yet with entrepreneurial opportunities everywhere, like all you can have your own store. You go to Shopify, start an account, you can have your own store by tomorrow. You don't even need to borrow any money from anybody. There's so many things that you could do. So in other words, at the time when the opportunities are the greatest they've ever been, nobody's trained to even be alert to them.
Yeah. Yeah. No. If you want to start a tech company today, all you really need is to go get a website on Namecheap. You need a computer that you can code with, and you need Codecademy, right?
Yeah.
You'll need some experience to get better at those things over time, but you don't need to go sit and get a master's degree in computer science or machine learning just to build a basic kind of company like that. And the push to keep putting more and more young people in school longer and longer not only discourages stuff like that, but that stuff like that being entrepreneurship, being value creation, which benefits everybody in the economy, but it ends up making these young people incapable of actually figuring out what they love and what they enjoy in their lives. Millennials today are some of the most depressed and anxious people who've ever walked the earth. And it's because they have no kind of cognitive tools, no kind of philosophical tools, no kind of physical tools to actually build meaning for themselves in the world.
You know, I'm looking at your table of contents, and you've written this book the way I would want to write a book if I were writing one right now. You've got a whole bunch of subheadings within each chapter, and each one, as somebody scans that table of contents, is crying out to be read. So can I just throw a few at you, and you come back at us with what you're thinking in there?
Sure, absolutely.
Not too many, because we want people to buy this book. You'd be crazy. You'd be crazy not to buy this book. It's so much fun. But I want to start right at the top. You have school is keeping you down, and right under that, why haven't you dropped out of school?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got that. Now, I think we're kind of getting the gist of that. But what you have in here is that basically, the idea is this: it basically boils down to schooling is not education, and
right.
you in fact have a subheading called that. What is the difference? I think people think they're the same.
Yeah. So schooling is a process. Schooling is something that's set up, and not all schooling is necessarily bad, right? But schooling that is forced on people is usually bad. And it is a process that people go through. Education is substance. Education is something that you have to engage in order to learn things, in order to adapt, in order to change. It's something that doesn't have a beginning or an end, right? Now, one of my favorite authors is Peter Thiel, the PayPal co-founder, and he says that one of the biggest issues with society today is that we oftentimes confuse process with substance, right? You see someone who has a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a PhD, an LLM, and all these other things. And you just assume that they're going to be like one of the smartest people you meet, right? But that's not necessarily true. If you put them into an environment, even in a law firm in that case, they're not necessarily going to be the most skilled person there. Education is something that is highly individually driven. It has certain ends. I think that the end and the purpose of education is to equip people to identify what meaning is in their life and to try to achieve that meaning from their life. School, on the other hand, is usually meant to just impress bureaucrats, at least in the United States today.
There is still an understandable view that people have that an educated person needs to know certain things. They need to have a basic knowledge of certain subject matter that they're not likely to learn on their own.
Right.
My thinking on that has changed over the years. I used to think that too, that we got to herd them into a classroom because how else are they ever going to read Homer?
Right.
Or you know, how else are they ever going to do these other things? But I'm inclined to think now I don't want to force people to do things they're going to be miserable about. They're just going to read the Cliff Notes anyway. They're not going to get anything out of it. Instead, I'd like to give people enough of a taste of the knowledge they could have so that in their own leisure time as adults, they have their whole lives to become educated. Whereas today, there's this sense that you got 4 years to become educated, and then after that, you go out and have your fun. I would rather promote the idea that you have your whole life to learn, to the contrary.
Right, and you have these young people, they get out of college at 22, 23 years old, and they haven't experienced any of that. They haven't experienced anything that is that people would generally view as leisure, which makes it that many of them are incredibly anxious people. And many of them have never experienced the classics, like you said. Many of them have never read Homer. Many of them don't know anything in the basic annals of Western civilization. So I mean, I'm in complete agreement. I think that what you need to encourage in young people is the love of learning, right? I think that school oftentimes squashes the love of learning because it makes us view learning as work, right? And when we're young, the primary thing we want to do, what we're hardwired to do, is to play. And work and play, if we view them on separate ends of the spectrum, we don't want productive things, things that are beneficial to us, to fall into the category of work. We want things that are beneficial to us to fall under the category of play. As you probably know, you're most productive when you're having fun with something that you're doing. And very, very early on, when we start to put young people into schools, they start to view the process that would be learning. And it's oftentimes, you know, teachers, many teachers are, you know, good-hearted people who really do care about the success of young people. They are inadvertently, through the system in which they're in, teaching young people to view learning as work. And that's really dangerous.
Now, is this what you're driving at? Because you have a section called, you graduated, now de-school yourself.
Yeah, so I am a big proponent of this idea of de-schooling. So people, while they're in school, pick up these really bad habits, these really bad skills, these really bad cultures that make it really difficult for them to succeed in the world. So my argument isn't merely that school is a bad place to learn, but my argument is that school oftentimes hurts people, right? And at the very, very core, like you just said, is that idea of viewing work and learning as two separate things, right? Or viewing learning as work. I like work in the sense of like productive labor. I don't like work in the sense of, you know, drudgery, right? So on a very, very basic level, someone who has de-schooled themselves has been able to parse apart drudgery and productive labor. Now, that's a really long and difficult process to do. And if you've gone through, you know, like 20 years of schooling, most people don't achieve that in their entire lifetimes. I mean, that's why you see people when they retire, they don't do anything with their lives, or even like why they retire in the first place. In addition to that, we learn other habits that I think are really important to have de-schooled out of us. One of those is the idea of domain dependence, that if we learn something in a certain area, that can't be applied to other areas. So when I was in high school, for example, I took a statistics class, and it was one of my favorite classes that I took, and it was really good at getting down to the ideas of sampling biases and of a lot of logical fallacies that are done in sampling biases and bad samples, bad studies. But many people will then go and like look at the election or look at polling and feel like, oh, you know, this person's ahead. And it's because, you know, like one of the things I love seeing was when people are like, oh, you know, Bernie Sanders is polling at number one in New Hampshire. And it's, well, it's next to Vermont. Has nobody paid attention to this? People don't carry over the things they learn in one area into another. And that's probably the most dangerous thing that needs to be de-schooled out of people.
I want to shift gears a bit because I know there's a complaint we hear mostly from conservatives that college has become this terrible place with political correctness and crazy people and all that. And if only we could just get back to the way college used to be. And you have a section called "There Never Was a Golden Age of Higher Ed." So what are you driving at with that?
Yeah, what I'm really looking at there is that this idea that the golden age of higher education was this age where people went and they just became learned, right? And the main reason they went was because they were trying to pursue education. And that's true for some people, right? That's true for people who do go on largely to become academics. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But what I do in that section is I look back at the history and the evolution of higher education. If we really look back at higher education before the 1900s, it was essentially a training ground for the aristocracy, the training ground for the religious class, and a training ground for academics, right? Those were the three things. If you wanted to be an academic, you went into higher education. If you wanted to be a priest, you had to go into higher education. A lot of colleges started as religious colleges for that purpose. And if you were very, very wealthy and you wanted to be trained on the mannerisms of being a very wealthy person and your family was very wealthy, you went and it was essentially a four-year summer camp. And what we had happen in the 1900s was we had something where after World War II, we started to see this growth of a middle class in the United States. And that middle class looked at successful people, right? They looked at wealthy people and they thought to themselves, okay, this person is wealthy. This person is successful. They've got a good job. Oh, they have a college degree. That must be why, right? So it's a post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy, right? People looked at that and they confused the fact that this person had a college degree with the cause of them being successful. And then you had something like the GI Bill comes along, which funnels more and more people who normally wouldn't be able to afford something like college into college. And it's just something following a process of mimetics. Rene Girard's idea that we mimic the desires of other people around us. And I don't think that higher education has ever been something that people go primarily to become learned. The main reason they've gone is because they want to be successful in the sense of like a monetary sense of the word or a job sense of the word.
I've got a lot more topics I want to cover, but first, a quick message that will be loved and enjoyed by all the entrepreneurial folks out there. I was so delighted recently to discover that one of the best email marketers in the world, Daniel Levis, happens to be a libertarian. And when I started talking to him about it, he said to me, "Well, you know, actually, a lot of marketers are libertarians." And I developed a theory as to why this might be, but I decided I'd ask him, "Why do you think so many marketers are libertarians?"
Well, I think it's because one of our core libertarian values is independence, and marketing is probably the easiest way to claim financial independence there is, especially in today's internet age. I mean, where else can you go into business with just a couple of $100 in capital? Where else can you go into business and generate cash flow and ROI in a matter of weeks or even days? And it's a very meritocratic sort of thing. Difficult to bureaucratize how people respond to an email or bureaucratize the bond that a marketer can enjoy with his or her subscribers. It's a very natural process. And therefore, the invisible hand awards the spoils to those of us who bring the most value and articulate that value best. And it's Wild West out there right now. Easy to get into the game and prosper.
Folks, if you want to maximize your effectiveness online and your profits, you can't afford not to know about Daniel Levis. Check out his free resources, which are going to be up for only a few more days, through tomwoods.com/Daniel. All right, I want to tell you actually a little story. just because it comes out of – it's from one of my followers, one of the people in my supporting listeners program. And I told his whole story in my email newsletter, which, by the way, my email newsletter is awesome. I send it out all the time. I don't care that that's not the way you're supposed to do it. It works for me, and it's funny and interesting, and I send it out every day. And you can jump on it at tomwoods.com. Just click the little red notify me button at the top. Well, anyway, a guy in my private Facebook group said – I just sold over 4,000 copies of my ebook. It's an ebook called Music Theory in One Lesson. And he, you know, for somebody with no name recognition to sell 4,000 copies of an ebook in a matter of months, that's a real achievement. So I asked him, how did he do it? And the answer was extremely entrepreneurial. Well, I started answering people's questions on Facebook about music theory, or I would, you know, I would be on forums, and in my signature line, I would always include a link to my book. And of course, it's a very catchy title. And just by doing that, by forming relationships, by building up a network of people who were interested in my answers, I built up people who wanted to find out what I was up to. And he's got a whole website now that he uses to sell lessons and so on and on. And he just did that starting from nothing and been just figuring out how would I promote – given that I have free resources to promote myself to the whole world and I don't have a big budget to spend, how would I do this? And he's been fantastically successful. I love stuff like that. And you know what? Nobody taught him how to do that.
No, that's one of those things that – going back to what I said earlier where you can build a better signal. Okay, it's great for me to say something like that catchy line. Okay, Slayback, so what are you really talking about? How can I seriously do this? I met a young man the other day who dropped out of Ohio State and decided to travel for a couple weeks, couple months through Latin America. And he is now launching a Kickstarter campaign for the book that he wrote based on what he was doing there. And just, again, doing something very similar to what you're talking about, going through on forums, going through on Quora, going through on all these other platforms and talking to people like people saying like, oh, I want to travel around, but I'm not rich. And he's like, I'm not rich either. You can travel around. You can do it on a budget. Here's how I did it. Here's the things I learned. And he's getting people who are following him on based on this. This kid's, you know, he's probably 20 years old and he's able to signal more to me from running a Kickstarter campaign, even if it's failed, than somebody would be able to signal to me by handing me a marketing business degree from even a good university. Right. It's amazing. The resources that are available to people today. Your iPhone has the equivalent of about $1 million worth of resources from 1980 on it, and people just use it to, you know, play Snapchat.
Yeah. I mean, and I think when in my own business endeavors, I come up against a snag, the answer is almost always one Google search away. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or I join a coaching program for a couple of months to save myself 3 years of agony. I'm the sort, I'd rather spend money than time. Because time, right now, I don't have a lot of time. I have more money than I have time. I'd like some people to train me. But then once I've done, I mean, I can, in other words, I can find the teachers that I need. There's a teacher for everything from, as we said, music instruction and language instruction, all the way up to how to segment your email list. You're just going to look for them. I sound like I'm complaining this whole episode. I'm just exasperated. I'm exasperated at people who look around and say, boy, this sure is a tough economy.
Right.
Yeah, it is a tough economy if you're thinking in the old 1980 model of how to live your life.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've been going around to different colleges and high schools in my region recently.
Whoa, you have? They let you in?
I know. I'm always shocked. I've been really pleasantly surprised by the response, especially from like guidance counselors and professors around here. But I was speaking to some students recently, some high school students, and I was telling them about these revolutions we're seeing in work, education, and entrepreneurship, and how entrepreneurship's easier, it's less risky, it's cheaper than ever before, how because of Google, because of LinkedIn, because of WordPress, all these other platforms, the value of the college degree is decreasing, not to mention the fact that you're going to be graduating with $37,000 in debt if you graduate in 2016. And the fact that there are computers that are going to be doing a lot of people's jobs in the next couple of years. And I keep giving versions of this talk and I catch myself midway through and I tell them, okay, it sounds like I am trying to scare you guys. It sounds like I'm being cranky, like old man Slayback's up here shaking his cane. But this is actually a really, really exciting time to be alive. The thing you have to do is you have to shake yourself out of the mindset that the people who are 30 years older than you have inculcated in you. One of the greatest injustices we do to young people is that we have the people giving them career advice being people who haven't been on the job market in 10, 15, 20 years. I think that's totally absurd. The job market is totally different today than it was 10 years ago. It's going to be totally different in 5 years from now. And we have people who make it their jobs when they haven't been on the job market for 15, 20 years to tell young people what the job market looks like today. That's bonkers. And that just does an injustice to young people.
I hope I could ask you something that's now not related to what we've been talking about, but
yeah.
I just love the I'm not sure I agree with it, but I love the heading, "Your high school friendships died out? Rejoice." Explain yourself.
Okay, so this was one that was just written one day when I was sitting around, you know, scrolling around on Facebook and wasting time, and I just realized how many people on Facebook I was friends with that, you know, I would not describe as my friends today. And I was talking to some of my friends about something similar about this. The fact that we put so much weight into our friendships that we have when we're young people, oh, it's good to build friends. I'm not saying don't have friends, right? But the fact that we put so much weight into this and then we are so distressed over it when we graduate from college or when we're like 30 years old and we go back to like the high school reunion or something. I'm a big advocate for homeschooling, but I was not homeschooled myself. So I did go to a public high school. So I saw, you know, I had friends from that. But schools are such an artificial place where the only thing you have in common with the people who are your friends in school oftentimes are the fact that you live in the same zip code as them and that you were born in the same arbitrary age range, right? That's a stupid way to determine who you should spend most of your time with. You don't have the time freedom when you're a young person to actually go find friends who share, you know, similar values to you. They might have different interests, but I think it's important that people and their friends share similar values, right? Most of my friends from high school were people who were either my age, 1 year younger than me, or 1 year older than me. I couldn't even be friends with someone who's 4, 5, 6, 7 years older than me, which is one of the reasons I find it so crazy when people say like, oh, you know, you're an advocate of homeschooling. How would homeschool kids become socialized? And it's like, you look at kids from high schools, the only people that they are trained to be socialized with are people their exact same age. You know, 8 times out of 10, these are not valuable friendships for most people. They're friendships out of necessity. And I think that if you are a young person in school right now, again, I'm not telling you don't make friends, right? I'm telling you, one, be very discerning about who you become friends with. You have more control over it than you think. You will probably become friends with the people who are in your immediate groups, again, out of necessity, out of ease. But it doesn't have to be that way. And again, because the internet, I was fortunate when I was growing up that I was one of these nerds who would spend some time on internet forums and like I made friends with people all around the country. If I hadn't done that, then most of my friends would be sitting in Somerset County, Pennsylvania right now.
Also, there are other opportunities to make friends. You know, if mm-hmm. you're not in high school, it's not like there are no other people in the world.
Right.
There are many ways, you know, if you join a club there are many, many different places that you can meet people. So that's one thing. And the second thing is, if I think a lot of people have not walked down the corridors of a typical high school in quite some time. If you do, you don't really say to yourself, boy, how impoverished I would be if I couldn't hang around with the people walking down this hallway. You don't say that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the really unfortunate thing that we're seeing is these civic organizations, these youth organizations, the few things that do allow, if you are a young person, to build friends and networks and culture outside of the school, they're dying for some reason. Like the Boy Scouts are having a harder and harder time, you know, recruiting Boy Scouts. The Freemasons have a youth organization. They're having a harder and harder time getting young people involved in that, youth groups, things like that. And those are really important for young people to be able to branch out outside of where they are. I also think it's important, you know, this is a point I make in the lead chapter to the book, the Why Haven't You Dropped Out of School chapter. I also do think it's really important if you are a young person to make friends who are much older than you, not just a year older than you, 2 years older than you. You need to have what I call a vertically diverse network, right? Because if we do view networking, and I mean this in the sense of actual friends, not in the sense of like, I'm going to go to the networking happy hour. Here's my business card. If you do view networking as professionally valuable, then someone who's your age is probably not going to be able to do much for you professionally, right? It's going to be someone who's a couple years older than you, 10, 15, 20 years older than you, who's going to be valuable to you. So these arguments you hear for college, where they push young people into college, well, you need to go and like build a network, right? It's a great way of building a network. Yeah, those people could be helpful for you, but chances are if you actually went and worked for a company, worked near a president, a CEO of the company, a founder, you know, met some of the venture capitalists involved, you're going to get much more valuable connections that way than spending 4 years with someone who's your age. That was a bit of an aside, so I just...
Yeah, but that's also an excellent point. You know, we could... Really, this conversation could be a whole podcast of its own. And actually, Brett Vinat already has a podcast more or less on this. Let's say something about Praxis, though, even though I did have Isaac Morehouse on the show. Mm-hmm. But it's quite a while ago now, and I'm sure you have your own perspective on it anyway. Tell us about Praxis and how people can find out about it.
Yeah, so the way I like to describe Praxis is it's an entrepreneurship apprenticeship. We're reinventing the apprenticeship for the 21st century. I love the idea of the apprenticeship, but because of a couple reasons in the 20th century, more than anything else, it fell out of favor for most trades, save a few blue-collar trades, right? And there's nothing wrong with those blue-collar trades. I think the way that we diss on them culturally in the U.S. is a very bad thing. I'm a big fan of Mike Rowe's work in this way. But with Praxis, what we do is we take young people, 18, 25 or so, and we place them with entrepreneurs at growing businesses, startups, companies like that, where they get to work for 10 months with them, see what it's like. I had a meeting this morning. You know, I'm based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I had a meeting this morning down on the rivers in Pittsburgh, with the president and the founder of one of the fastest growing ad companies in the country. And I was describing Praxis to him. He was telling me, yes, I would love to have someone apprentice with me. And if we had this when I was, you know, 18 years old, I probably wouldn't have gone to college because this is exactly the kind of thing that I was looking for. And it's hearing that, that I know that we're really onto something. We want young people to be able to take control of their education and take control of their careers. Like you said, a lot of people are just in college because of sheer inertia. A lot of smart people too. A lot of good, hardworking people. And I don't necessarily mean smart in sense of grade. Sometimes it correlates to grades. Sometimes it doesn't. But you do hear people tell you in the U.S., yeah, you know, too many young people go to college. I hear professors tell me this occasionally. But usually what they mean by that, and they're not wrong when they say this, but usually what they mean by that is like too many kids who are dumb are going to college, right? Too many kids that they don't want to be teaching to are going to college. But you also see too many smart, ambitious, hardworking, you know, great work ethic young people going to college as well. And while they're in there, they're blowing a ton of money. They're blowing 4 years that they could be doing something else with. And they're, in my mind, and a lot of times they're picking up these really bad habits, right? So with Praxis, we really want to provide another opportunity to someone who's, you know, 17, 18 years old, or even like 20 years old and currently in college. And like this, I'm hungry to get out into the real world and build something because that's how I was. That's why I needed to pursue something like this, and that they can come do this and work with someone who wants to be working with them.
Well, that's very exciting. Now, is it discoverpraxis.com. Okay. Discoverpraxis.com is where people can find out about it. So that what we've been saying here today, it's not just abstractions, right? Although I think we've tried to be as practical as possible, but here is a specific recommendation. You can check this thing out. I'm going to link to that, especially for people who are driving. Just remember the number 623, because at tomwoods.com/623, I'll have a link to Praxis, have a link to my conversation with Isaac Morehouse, who's also with Praxis, and related episodes that we've done on this subject. And, of course, a link to your book, The End of School, Reclaiming Education from the Classroom, which is available for pre-order. And people, you should pre-order this thing because you're going to pre-order it, and then a few weeks will go by and you'll forget that you pre-ordered it, and then you'll get it, and it'll be such a delight. You're going to say, I forgot about this, and it's 10 times better than even Wood said that it was. So anyway, best of luck with it. It's really great that you're doing it. I mean, you are living the message that you're teaching, and it's extremely rare to come across that. You actually practice what you preach. So good for you, and congratulations.
Thank you. I think that it's important that you have to have skin in the game if you're saying something like this.
Exactly right. Well, again, thanks so much for your time and best of luck with the book. I hope it's a smash success for you.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
All right, everybody. I want to let you know about something that a fellow listener is doing, and that's a brand new site called levelheadedlibertarian.com. There's no hyphen anywhere. It's just levelheadedlibertarian.com. And what I like about it is not just the content, but the way it's laid out. It's elegant. It's a very simple layout, but elegant, sleek, attractive. I would want to model myself after something like this if I were starting off a blog. So check that out. If you're planning to start a blog, I would check out Level-Headed Libertarian to see how it's clean, it's not cluttered, yet it has everything he wants on there. And he's got some good posts so far on bigotry and free speech, on whether Obama is right about Cuba, and whether a Trump versus Hillary contest might not actually redound somehow to the benefit of the cause of liberty. If you're skeptical of that, well, check out levelheadedlibertarian.com. I'm going to be linking to it also at tomwoods.com/623. Remember, if you would like a shout out for your blog that you're dreaming about starting, then check out tomwoods.com/publicity and get your hosting through there. And you'll get the free publicity plus a whole bunch of free tutorials to get you up and running very quickly. So tomwoods.com/publicity is the place to look. Now, tomorrow, if all goes well, I'm going to be talking to Ron Paul's bodyguard from the presidential campaigns. And something tells me he's got some interesting stories to to tell us. So I hope you can tune in for that. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.